Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, William Friday has been dead more than a year now, and we still haven't learned how we're going to do without him. But I've got some help. President Friday's biographer, William Link, Bill Link, the professor of history at the University of Florida, and the author of a wonderful book about President Friday, which has been updated, expanded, and reissued by UNC Press this fall, William Friday, Power, Purpose, and American Higher Education. And all the way from Florida, Bill Link, you've been willing to join us for a conversation about President Friday and about the new book. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, glad to be here.
I guess, you know, to localize this program, you're down there in Florida, but you write a lot about North Carolina history. In fact, you've written a book of North Carolina history, and you've of course written about President Friday. You've written books about Virginia and the Civil War, and only now you seem to be turning your attention southward towards Florida, writing about civil rights in Atlanta. And but you're still a North Carolinian, aren't you? Don't you? I mean, maybe you vote down there and you pay taxes down there, but your heart's still here, right?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of ties to North Carolina. And,
you have a wonderful sister who's our neighbor here in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, and then my brother lives in Winston-Salem, and both my parents are from the state. And so, yeah, definitely I consider myself a Tar Heel, a North Carolinian.
Well, I didn't even think I would ask you this, but before we talk about the revised edition of the William Friday biography, tell us how you happened to get in the business of being William Friday's biographer at all. How'd that come about?
Well, it was sort of an unusual event, I think, in a way, because it wasn't something that immediately occurred to me. And actually, it was in November of 1989. I remember it quite clearly. The then director of the University of North Carolina Press, Matt Hodgson, we were at a meeting, historical meeting, and he approached me about writing a book about Bill Friday. And, of course, I taught at UNC Greensboro for many years and was very familiar with Bill Friday, but I hadn't ever considered the possibility of writing a book about him. And so I guess my immediate concern was, you know, would I be able to do what a historian does, which is to try to pursue the truth and follow leads wherever they go. And also, you know, writing a book about a living person, because Bill Friday in 1989 was still very much alive and very active. And, so I thought about it, and it seemed like an interesting subject and an interesting opportunity, and I kind of dove into it. Not entirely 100% sure that it was going to work out, and I wasn't disappointed. It was a really sort of amazing experience being able to have
Why do you think they ask you to do it?
Well, that's a good question. I think my career at that point was, you know, I was still fairly young, so maybe they felt like I'd be a good victim.
I guess the reason I asked the question is that this would be a topic that many young historians or other people who were interested in North Carolina politics, North Carolina education, or just a personal biography, to have a book that was solicited by the UNC Press. The people that I know are always trying to put books in front of the UNC Press with not always good success. So you've got a book. I don't want to say it's guaranteed to being published, but you've got a leg up on that, and that would have been an attractive offering for any young author.
Well, I think, I mean, I knew Matt. Just back up a little bit, I had published a book with UNC Press a few years before that, and it was on, my first book was on a kind of a social history of education in Virginia in the late 19th, early 20th century. So I had some background in history of education, and certainly the history of the South, and Bill Friday would fit into all those things. But I knew Matt, so maybe it might have been, I'm not sure entirely what was in Matt Hodgson's mind, but as director of the UNC Press, but I think the fact that we had a relationship had something to do with it. And he was very insistent that he wanted to find somebody who was a scholar that would approach it in a scholarly way and would
Well, Bill Link, I think the folks who are listening want us to talk about Present Friday, and I'm going to let's take a quick break and come back and visit with about your wonderful book about Present Friday. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're visiting with our friend William Link, Bill Link, about his biography of William Friday, William Friday, Power, Purpose, and American Higher Education, the second edition, which has just come out, and it includes an update by Bill Link bringing us up to date on President Friday's activities from the time of the first book until his death. And Bill, thanks for taking time to visit with us.
Yeah, glad to do it.
I want to be sure that we cover what you cover new in the book. So let's turn to the additions and the changes that you made in the book. Can you update us on them, sort of your elevator speech about why we need to buy the book if we read the first one?
Well, basically, there are two new things, I guess, in the revised, the second edition. The first is a revised introduction, so it has different elements. It has a lot of the old introduction in it, but I added some things to try to put William Friday in a little larger context after his death. And then the second, probably bigger part, is the epilogue, which is actually really sort of a full chapter on the career of Bill Friday from the time that I wrote the first edition, which was 1995, to his death in 2012. Those years cover a lot of territory, and he was up to a lot. And the epilogue kind of deals with the last portion of his career, really, in public life in North Carolina and in the nation.
Give us a summary of the topics that you cover in President Friday's latter life.
Well, there are a variety of things he's involved in. I think, you know, he remains very active in the University of North Carolina and the state of North Carolina. Those are kind of his preeminent concerns. But I think, to my mind, the thread that follows, that one can follow all the way through from 1995 to 2012 with Bill Friday is his attempt to reshape and reform intercollegiate athletics. So much of the epilogue is about that and about his attempts to, through the Knight Commission on intercollegiate athletics, his efforts in that to bring changes to the way college sports is practiced.
Well, how did that effort get started?
It started, I deal with it in the first edition actually a bit, because it started in the late 80s when as president, obviously when he was president of the University of North Carolina, I just back up a little bit all the way through his presidency of UNC, he had to deal with the issue in various forms, beginning in the late 50s through the 60s, certainly, and in many ways, some of the same pressures were evident, you know, then in the 50s and 60s in terms of commercialization and the impact of broadcasting, much smaller, but they become much bigger later on. And
I think the people who followed his career and followed university athletics in North Carolina remember what we call the Dixie Classic crisis. But was he active in other ways once that signal got sent out? Were there things that you'd catalog that he did with respect to college athletics during his administration as president?
There was a period of sort of stability, I think, in intercollegiate athletics within North Carolina from 1962 is when the Dixie Classic is, and that he administers some very strong medicine, and in terms of sanctions, just that he administered on schools involved, and earlier than that, there were point shaving allegations related to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. But really after 62, that sort of thing isn't, there's a period of stability, and it's not until the 80s that you see new challenges in terms of the way
These took place, though, after he was, I was thinking about the Jim Valvano thing came along after President Friday.
Well, no, it's going on when he was, you know, to some extent. I think the, you know, just to answer your question more simply, that the he doesn't have to deal with the rash of problems that are in the mid-80s. So that's probably the simple answer. Although he's constantly keeping an eye on it, certainly all through this period, I don't think that what it becomes after, say, 1985-86 is a much, much bigger problem.
After he left the presidency, what drew him back into this area of interest of college athletics?
He became involved with Creed, when Creed Black, this Lexington, Kentucky journalist who was heading up the Knight Foundation, and Creed Black had had a career of in journalism, but also was the author of a major expose of the University of Kentucky program, basketball program, and so he and Creed had a relationship already, but they, in a sense, sort of hatched up this idea to create a new commission in 1989 to re-examine intercollegiate athletics and make recommendations in an ongoing kind of way, what became an ongoing kind of way with college sports. So he had, in 1986, Bill Friday became head of the Keenan Fund here in Chapel Hill, and that provided him the resources and also the kind of facilities to continue in public life. And it was while at the Keenan Fund that he started a number of initiatives. But intercollegiate athletics becomes one of the big ones after 1989. He was involved in literacy. He was involved with poverty efforts. He was involved with, through the fund, a lot of things related to higher education and education generally. But after 89, he gets more and more involved. I think it's safe to say more and more involved in the Knight Commission, what becomes the Knight Commission, in its effort to kind of reform intercollegiate athletics. He co-chairs the commission that's organized in 1989 with Father Theodore Hesburgh, who was longtime president of Notre Dame. And the two of them are kind of were major figures in American universities that lent a great deal of prestige and weight to this effort.
Bill, excuse me for interrupting, but I'm real curious. Was the Knight Commission created in part by President Friday, or did the somebody else come up with the idea and recruit President Friday and Father Hesburgh to be the co-chairs? Who were the drivers in this process, and was Mr. Friday one of them?
I think he was certainly one of the drivers. It was created, you know, after he and Creed Black kind of hatched the idea, might be the most accurate way to describe it. So it wasn't a case of mission being organized and then they chose Bill Friday. It was really, he was in on it early on in terms of the planning and creation establishment of the commission. And he was, even, and Hesburgh was a very important figure, but Friday was really the guiding force.
Well, let me ask you just in a rough way, then. Did President Friday recruit Father Hesburgh so that for the power of his name, or were they partners in putting this thing together from the beginning?
Well, they already had a very good relationship, so the two of them had been involved in the Carnegie Commission, I believe, and a number of other activities. So he knew Hesburgh, Ted Hesburgh, quite well, Father Ted. And I don't think there's any question they wanted to add Hesburgh as another kind of weight, you know, a person with gravitas that could. So I actually never asked him this, but I wouldn't surprise me if he's the one that came up with Hesburgh's name.
Yeah, me too. I'm just trying to get inside President Friday's mind about this, and I mean, you have done it. So, what was it that he was really worried about in the late 1980s in terms of college athletics? Those of us who heard him talk about it knew that there was, this wasn't just something to keep him occupied. He really had this was a burr, and more than a burr in his saddle. I mean, it was really, what was it? What was he really worried about?
Well, he was worried, I think, essentially about the integrity of the university system and its ability to maintain its independence. Those were, if you that when he was kind of under the tutelage of Frank Porter Graham and Gordon Gray. What he observed, I think, was this kind of delicate balance that universities maintain, in particularly public universities, in terms of maintaining public confidence and integrity. And I think his fear, based on his lifetime experience, particularly what happened in the 50s and 60s, was that athletics would undermine the integrity and ultimately public trust in the university system. So he was terribly worried about it, not only for North Carolina, especially for North Carolina, because that was his baby, really, the UNC system, but he was worried about American higher education generally. You know, would it be able to survive sort of erosion of public support and trust and integrity of the system?
What was his strategy for facing up to these problems, identifying them, and then developing support for reform?
Well, I think the strategy of the Knight Commission was to have lots and lots of exposure. So they had numerous hearings where they brought in the sports establishment, coaches, athletic directors, university presidents. The first 15 years or so of the Knight Commission, the whole approach was predicated on reasserting control. That the academic side of the university system, universities, individual universities, would assert control over the sports operation through presidents. So there'd be presidential control, and presidents would be responsible. College university presidents, they'd be the ones where the buck stopped. They'd be the ones who would be able to exercise authority and rein in whatever excesses there were. So that was the strategy, was to institute changes in the NCAA. And also in the culture of the way athletics is practiced by having some measure of control and standards as well that presidents would enforce.
So how did that work out?
I don't think it worked out that well. I mean, actually, I think it's, what happened really was that if you look at 1989 to 2013, the whole thing changed in a lot of ways because of the avalanche of money that came into college sports. There's just too much money. And too much at stake. So it turned out, I think, in the end, that the presidents were not that, university presidents didn't turn out to be the best guarantors, because very often it became such a complex operation that the management of it was a major challenge. And the money, television money especially, all the billions of dollars that came from television drove a whole new set of priorities that undermined a whole number of things. So, you know, in 1989, you didn't really have ESPN, for example, ESPN, the broadcast network, as powerful as they are today, or the broadcast network power that they have over sports, more or less dictate when sporting events occur, how they occur. Some institutions, they basically run the place.
Say this again. Some institutions, you're talking about ESPN runs college.
Well, there's a story in the New York Times a couple of months ago about Louisville, University mm-hmm. of Louisville, not to name names, but that's...
The newest AC member of our conference.
Yes, yeah.
And so tell us about that.
An extreme example.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's an extreme example of things that Bill Friday really, really didn't like, which was, you know, you have scheduling, you have standards basically being dictated by what a consumer market for broadcast television wanted. So in the case of Louisville, you can read the New York Times article, but, you know, the ESPN pretty much dictates when and where and how sporting events occur, especially in the big-time sports like football and basketball.
Well, yeah,
that happens everywhere. They're not alone, but that's probably the most extreme example. But every school that's involved in sports is doing the same thing, you know. And he, for example, he objected to things that seem almost quaint now. You know, he objected to having football games 7 days a week, or basically 7 days a week. Or he objected long ago to the practice of firing coaches if they didn't win. You know, he felt like a coach should be, institution shouldn't just operate like a business. That's now, but that he felt that way when, for example, when UNC fired Dick Crum back in the late 80s. About that, because he, you know, Crum was fired, a nice guy, but he was fired because he wasn't winning. But now, 2013, that's kind of, as I say, almost quaint and antiquated. It is quaint and antiquated based on the standards of change. So the whole thing kind of changed, you know, the terms of, and so the Knight Commission approach, I don't know if it's really had that much effect, you know, to be cynical about it.
I want to talk some more about it, but we do need to take a break. I'm visiting with Bill Link, who's the author of William Friday, Power, Purpose, and American Higher Education, now in a second edition, and we're talking about some of the things that Professor Link covers in that edition. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. There's a new edition of the wonderful biography of William Friday by Professor Bill Link. The book is William Friday, Power, Purpose, and American Higher Education. It's now out in a second edition by UNC Press, and Professor Link is telling us some of the things that that he covered in that edition, because these were pieces of the activities of the man who wouldn't stop being active, even though he had well past the retirement age. And we're talking about college athletics. I want to, you know, one of the, you mentioned earlier that Bill Friday was a student of, or was just, was worked under Frank Porter Graham, and learned things, modeled some of the things from Frank Porter Graham's life. And similarly, at the end of, after he'd left the university and left the Senate, Frank Porter Graham went to the UN and was assigned a project of trying to bring a solution to the Kashmir situation between India and Pakistan. And he got up there and worked on it and worked on it and worked on it, and sort of spent the rest of his life working on a project that never, and to this day, has not worked out. And some of the ways that you describe Bill Friday's efforts, as you have with us today, and then in your book, he worked on this university athletics, college athletics, worked on it, and worked on it, and worked on it, and was never able to resolve it, and had to be a disappointment to him, like Frank Graham's failure or inability to reach a solution, because these were two men of gigantic ability to bring closure to situations. They were optimistic, they were hard workers, and yet their final projects were maybe a disappointment to him. Am I way off base with that?
I hadn't thought of that, but I think that's I think you're on base. Really, the thing about about both men was their essential optimism about human nature and about, you know, the ability of human beings to identify problems and solve it. And Graham and Friday were very different in a lot of ways, but that is similarity. And you know, in both cases, they took on in many ways sort of insoluble problems, or problems that were overcome by other circumstances, the normal problem-solving skills that both of them possessed didn't work. And yet, even though, you know, I know in the case of Bill Friday, certainly, you know, he does retain this incredible optimism, even down to the last. He had moments of, he's very realistic about it, and moments of despair in a sense, but he ultimately was always a person who believed that the future would better than the present and the past. And you believe that in the case of intercollegiate athletics.
One of the things that must have been disappointing to him in the time immediately before his death is what was happening at Chapel Hill, mm-hmm. sort of the signature for him of what college athletics might be like, notwithstanding some of the problems that we had in dealing with the commercial aspects, that there was a reputation on the campus that Otherwise, Carolina ran a clean program. And are you able to cover his feelings and reactions to the disappointments that UNC Chapel Hill had with respect to its athletic program?
Yes, I certainly deal with that, and that certainly was a major disappointment to him. I don't think there's any question about that, that he felt that personally, because, it's, you know, he was Bill Friday was a person who cared about the state of North Carolina very deeply, and particularly, and the University of North Carolina was an extension of his, you know, that relationship between UNC and the people in North Carolina. He always felt was very special, but Chapel Hill was, that's where he lived, and that's where his, you know, the University of North Carolina Chapel Hill campus is backyard, and he had personal pride in the clean way in which the program had been run since the early 60s, and to see what happened in terms of the exposure and in terms of kind of sullied reputation that Chapel Hill earned was profoundly disappointing to him. So there's no question about that. I think it was really one of the great disappointments of his life, even might have been the last 2 years of his life when all this was unfolding.
One of the things that Mr. Friday liked to have was young partners, and you describe a partnership that developed later on with Taylor Branch. And can you tell for the Taylor Branch, the great Pulitzer Prize-winning author of the series of America in the Martin Luther King years, got interested in college athletics a few years ago, and wrote some provocative both reports and proposals. And how did President Friday react to Taylor Branch and his spotlight on college athletics?
Well, you're right. I think in that he often did have mentoring relationships. Of course, Taylor's not that young. So
well, from my point of view, he is. But
he sounds young.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But certainly, that's a good example of a person that, you know, Friday immediately recognized the man's talent and his ability to express himself. And I think that, you know, what started out as a kind of small little project on Branch's part to look at college sports became a fairly in-depth study on, which is eventually published in Atlantic, and I think there's probably going to be something else following it. But you know, it's a very searching and in many ways radical sort of approach to intercollegiate athletics. I, you know, a lot of respects what Branch said and what Friday said are not on the same page.
Yeah, first of all, where did they agree, and then where did they disagree about the approaches? They were excited, according to your book, they were excited about having partners and recognizing the enormous problem, and then there were some side issues that they didn't agree about. Tell us about that.
I think they agreed basically on the analysis of how what kind of state the ship of state was in, the problems that existed in college sports. They agreed about the in terms of what the problems were. I think their solutions were a different game, because Branch favored, ultimately favors paying athletes, and Friday was opposed to that. But that didn't bother him at all. You could see, in fact, there was you probably were there, but even DG, but the session they had in there on the UNC campus, which Branch was on the stage with Friday to have a discussion about college sports. You could see the two men had obvious benefit rapport, and even though they disagreed about things, I don't think Friday minded having somebody a little farther out than he was in terms of what he had to say, because that pushes the envelope, and that he often had relationships with people like that that were on other issues were a little more aggressive or a lot more aggressive. He didn't have a problem with that because he saw down the road that this might do some good, might actually improve the situation or bring the issues to the fore in the case of college sports.
Well, what you taught me, or what came to my mind, I guess, as a result of the reports that you were giving me on this discussion, which was fascinating to me, was that what Taylor Branch seemed to be pushing with Mr. Friday is an idea of, let's recognize that this is a professional commercial enterprise,
right,
and treat the the people who provide the labor force for it fairly.
Right.
And President Friday resisting and saying, no, what we really need to do is to go back and make this truly an amateur operation that is primarily in service to, we don't need to pay these people, we need to serve them as college athletics. And
right.
But, so, I mean, in one sense, it's a diametrically opposed a pathway to reform in college athletics.
Yeah, I mean, that's like two opposite ends. That's why it's interesting that he, you know, he was so supportive of Branch in a way, and really, in many ways, I think admired what he was doing. So, it was a very pragmatic side to Bill Friday all through his life. Of course, he's a person that, you know, not bound. He's got a core set of beliefs. He had a core set of beliefs. He was an idealist in a lot of ways, but he was pragmatist and was willing to try a variety of things to see if they would work. You know, for example, congressional intervention, he was always very fearful of Congress involving himself in college sports. And I think toward the end of his career, he's thinking, bring it on. I mean, it's a good idea to get Congress involved because that would add more leverage and more pressure.
Before we take a break, I mean, you want to call it a failure, but this was an unaccomplished task in President Friday's. This was not something he was able to tie a ribbon around before he died.
Well, I mean, and certainly in the big picture, there's certainly little part, you know, the standard that the Knight Commission was able to get the NCAA to adopt in terms of measuring programs, the kind of system in which they adopted a kind of output-based system. That's a minor. This series of minor victories, I think, but the big picture, things have changed so much. I don't see how you could see it as something that's successful. And it's ultimately, I think, has to be seen as a kind of frustrating experience for Friday and his ability to pull off what he was trying to accomplish.
Well, we're going to continue our discussion with William Link about his revised biography of William Friday, coming out really just as we speak. He and I will be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with Professor William Link, who is the author of William Friday, Power, Purpose, and American Higher Education. It's a wonderful biography of President Friday, now newly revised to take into account activities of President Friday during the latter part of his life. Bill Link, in the time that we've got left, would you reflect now, a year after President Friday's death, with us about his lasting achievements and influence, and to the extent that you can put a little more distance, what ultimately historians will say about his impact on North Carolina and American history?
To begin with, I think he had a huge impact on 20th century North Carolina. And I think I would be surprised if 25, 30 years from now that doesn't stand. Bill Friday would be seen as, in terms of the public figures of the state of North Carolina, in terms of governors, senators, people in public affairs, to my mind, he's got to be, you know, one of the handful of people that was instrumental in leading the state and modern North Carolina. You think about the story. Let's think about the story of modern North Carolina. Well, it's a state that in 100 years went from being the most illiterate and, in many ways, one of the more underdeveloped states economically in the South. The North Carolina of the late 20th century still has plenty of problems, but it's a place that, you know, has one of the better university education systems, public university systems, and it also is a place that has a lot of dynamic qualities. And he's not solely responsible for those, but he figured in a lot of these changes that have taken place. So I think in terms of the state of North Carolina alone, you sort of have to see him as a central figure in public affairs. And the other matter would be higher education. We're in a position now where our whole economy, in many respects, and our culture revolve around the status and position of universities. I'm a university professor, so I see it that way. But he has to be seen as one of the key builders of modern public university system. Harry Woodburn Trace, President Frank Porter Graham, of course, the great Frank Porter Graham. But Friday was a system builder who built, you know, aside from University of California, University of North Carolina is really the best public university system of any in the country. And it's had its ups and downs, certainly, but, you know, that's a major accomplishment in terms of American higher education nationally. So, hard to say, you know, what are people going to say 20 or 30 years from now, but I think I could go, I would, I'm rest assured that I think they're going to have to grapple, if you're interested in public affairs and state of North Carolina, you'd have to deal with them, you have to deal with Bill Friday and his legacy.
Of the 20th, the latter part of the latter half of the 20th century, who would be the, I mean, are there people in North Carolina history who would have to be compared with President Friday in terms of their importance to this progress that you really succinctly and eloquently described? Who else competes for a place in the history book that your successor will be writing 25 or 50 years from now?
I think, you know, among the governors, certainly the North Carolina has had some very able governors in the last half of the 20th century, and that include people like Luther Hodges. Terry Sanford, you know, had a brief but brilliant career as governor, and also in many ways as important a career in building Duke University. Jim Hunt, you know, would be probably the only one of that group that really stands up to Bill Friday in terms of the significance of Hunt, Jim Hunt, and four-term governor, and many ways, you know, a very dominant figure in the politics of North Carolina of the last quarter of the 20th century.
Mm.
Among senators, you know, good old Jesse Helms. I wrote a book about him, so I can get a plug in for him.
Right, but, that's right. You wrote a great book about him. I want to talk about that again sometime.
Yeah, but Helms didn't do, you know, Helms wasn't a builder. So what is Helms' legacy?
Right.
Well, he was a person who was against things. He wasn't a person who built things. And Bill Friday was the person who built things. No, I would put Jim Hunt. I would put probably Terry Sanford. Jim Hunt, Terry Sanford, Bill Friday is the most important public figures in North Carolina, last part of the 20th century.
I don't want to get too far off base because we're almost at an end, but President Friday and Governor Sanford, or Senator Sanford, had a little rivalry, didn't they? Was there a little personal rivalry there? They were on the same team. They were on the same team working on the same things.
Yeah, they had the same circle of people. You know, they had the old association when Sanford and Friday went back, you know, their relationship went back to the 40s. But there was something there. When I did all that time interviewing Bill Friday in the early 1990s, you could sort of see it a little, or hear it a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Not a lot. He was very, very careful about that. And ever so cautious about ever saying anything about Sanford. And then I interviewed Sanford, and I detected the same thing. I was in the, you know, Senate office building there in Washington, and very cautious when he was talking about Bill Friday. There, you know, I think it came down to a kind of rivalry, really. And when Sanford was governor, there was a rocky relationship, but they had a few conflicts.
Well. Listen, you've gotten into something that interests me so much. The clock says it's time to stop.
Too bad.
But, Bill Link, thanks for this wonderful addition to your wonderful book about William Friday, and for your generosity in sharing some of the experiences and wisdom that you have with us today. And hope we can continue this discussion sometime soon.
Yeah, thank you, Dee Dee. Appreciate it.
Thanks to Bill Link for his book, William Friday, Power, Purpose, and American Higher Education in its second edition. And thanks to all of you for listening. This is D.G. Martin, who's talking, and I'll be back here before you know it.